All is well, and we are ready to rock and roll. So again, thank you all for continuing to support the show. Again, thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother, Dr. Nate Chapman, Dr. Keelan Hinton. As well, as we said, we thank you for your comments, suggestions, and ideas and perspectives. Again, please contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com for any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas for shows, topics, panels, book writers, or any subjects that you would like to hear us converse about. But before we get started again, and today we think we have an interesting topic to some current events. Current events. Mr. Dave Chappelle was attacked on stage. For those of you who may or may not know. And I thought it was interesting because it made us think about it made me think about the original. I can remember when the Will Smith slap happened, and I said to myself, and I actually made a post, because I know quite a few people who are who do open mics and stuff. And I said, "Be careful, cause it's open season on comedians now." And now the question is: are comedians gonna come under attack because people don't like their jokes now? And it seems like comedy used to be that space that you could be edgy, and you could explore, and you could be edgy, and you could push the boundaries. But now I wonder if comedians have to worry about, especially when we saw no consequences from what happened with Will Smith after he smacked Chris Rock. He stayed at the show. He got an award, probably one of the most prominent and coveted awards there are in his field. And he went home. And we haven't seen him get arrested. We haven't seen any repercussions from it at all. And I think that is... I think that when people see stuff like that happen and they see no consequences, I think that that's when things cross into a dangerous stratosphere. I think that when things like that happen, there have to be immediate consequences to deter people from thinking about doing stuff like that. And I think Dave Chappelle said he had been doing comedy for 35 years. And like this guy, that's never happened. This guy just ran up on stage and literally tackled him. Now the guy got a beat down after that, but I don't know. I wonder what that had happened had the Will Smith thing not happened and there been no consequences from that. So I don't know. I don't know. Any thoughts, Dr. Chapman, before we rock and roll and move forward?
Well, I mean, I understand like that there were no immediate consequences, but I feel like definitely there's been consequences. You know, he's been, you know, whatever, he resigned and or was banned from the Academy, the Oscars. Obviously, he's taken hits on some of his movies that are no longer being played in certain places. I know it wasn't immediate, but just wanted to say like that there were consequences for him. I think that... I don't know. I mean, interesting to hear what the logic was for the person, this common person, to do that. I'm assuming it's common person. I don't know, but like what his logic was, that obviously wouldn't make it right. I think it also makes me think about, it's loosely related, but watching the NBA or even baseball games where there's been a beef between the fans and what's going on. So the most recent thing I'm thinking of the other night, Draymond, when they were playing the Grizzlies, he was inadvertently elbowed by another player, which basically busted open his eye, and the fans were basically rooting that, like happy that happened, and like clapping as he was like leaving out of the stadium with his eye bloodied, and he gave the fans the bird. And even though it seems like it's not related, it sort of is. Like you have discord dialogue about things in comedy where you can loosely joke and say things about people that may offend people. And even though it's not the same way in a basketball game, it's still entertainment. And so where's the barrier between the entertainer and the audience. And that's like a whole, I guess, another point of conversation, what's appropriate for the fan to do, whether it's watching a comedian or watching a basketball game.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe that's a conversation for another day, you know, this idea of boundaries. When I used to referee basketball, you know, middle school and high school basketball, it was one of the things that, you know, even the coaches and the announcers and commentators talked about how dangerous it was, how dangerous refereeing basketball is as compared to other sports. And it's because the fans are so close to you. In football, there's a gate and they're sitting behind a gate in the back in some stands in the back somewhere. You know, and I'm not saying that they don't get it also, but basketball is very different. There are no barriers. You know, I've had fans throw ice on the floor in front of me to try to make me trip, or, you know, kids being kids trying to trip the refs coming down. Like, they're so close to you that it just, especially in rivalry games, it feels so intense and so unsafe that anything can happen to you at any point, you know. That's a good question. What are the boundaries? Where is the boundaries? Are there boundaries of what fans should be able to say and do? And that's probably another conversation for another day. Some of the things that fans say to players, it's unbelievable. So, I don't know.
Yeah, but going back to the comedian thing, I mean, so we expect that comedians are going to be edgy. But I think, I'm not a comedian, but I've heard different comedians talk about whether there's a line or not. And like, some have things they don't talk about. Some have things that they think are off, you know, and others don't. So that's an interesting conversation in and of itself, even if that fan didn't jump up on the stage. It's what's the line? Like, I'm not justifying the fan jumping up on the stage, but like, this whole idea of what the line is interesting too, particularly when we're in a culture that is very aware of what people say.
Yeah. As you know, at one point I used to do open mics around here, and that was a debate that that me and other like local comedians used to have. And I didn't do it here. I did stuff around Charleston. Shout out Blue Parrot. But that there were some people who believed that anything is on the table when you come to a comedy show. And when you come to a comedy show, you risk hearing something that you don't like. Because you know beforehand, before you get there, that there are some comedians that will say anything.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, that's the structure that's the structure of the craft, that you know potentially you don't know who's going to step on stage. And so when I would go, I would prepare, like waiting my turn. I've heard racial jokes that I didn't think was funny, or I've heard gay jokes I didn't think was, there's certain things that I wouldn't talk about, or I wouldn't joke about personally. But we all have different limits, and a lot of it is how jokes are said, and you got to kind of feel and see if there really is some malice there. And with some people, it's easier, and some people, it's harder. I had somebody, I was there one night waiting on my set, and this guy made a black joke. He made a joke about black people. And then afterwards, he approached me and apologized. And my thing is, well, if you got to apologize for the joke, then you probably shouldn't have said it. That's my logic. If you tell a joke that you feel bad about making, or that you have to apologize for after you make it, then you should ask yourself, should you have told the joke in the first place? So that's kind of my logic. I've sat and heard people tell all kinds of crazy jokes that I thought that were over my line, but I have to understand that my line doesn't rule the world. And I also take into consideration the context that I'm in. And in that context, I probably let a lot more fly, and I'm a lot more flexible than what I would in the real world. Than I would withstand sort of in my everyday life. I know in that environment, people gonna make jokes about people with disabilities and all kind of stuff. And it's just sort of what it is. And a lot of times people are going for shock value.
Right.
Sometimes people laugh because, and not because it's funny, but it's so outrageous that you would even say that. And you'll see people laughing, but they don't think the joke is funny. And that's what they're going for. They want you to laugh because right. They want you to think that this boy is wild. This girl is wild. I cannot believe she would even say that. You know what I'm saying? So you just have to understand that when you deal with comedy, I think you can't go to a comedy show and then all of a sudden hear something you don't like and get offended because you know going in, I might hear anything. And if I have things that I'm sensitive to, maybe I shouldn't go. And especially with Dave Chappelle at this point, you know who he is. You know he might make trans jokes. Like when you go to sets or when you go certain places and you see certain people, you know you're going to hear certain things. You know certain comedians tell racial jokes or political humor or whatever. And to go and to already know who they are and to still get mad and you know what their thing is, it's kind of like, it looks like you, sometimes that could appear like you just want to fight. You just want to argue.
Well, that's an interesting point. You know, like I think there's some TV show where I remember some iteration or movie or something. Like, I don't remember. Probably was a comedy. But basically it was like, this character was like, they just went to a Waffle House and they had like an allergic reaction to the waffles. And they said like, oh, you know, I'm allergic to waffles. And then they're like, well, why are you going to a Waffle House if you're allergic to waffles? So it's the same. That's what it makes me think of. If that's going to be your reaction, then why would you go to that situation? But I think it's also interesting because I do think with comedy, it's different because obviously there's going to be some things that are going to be sharp and yeah, you would expect that wouldn't happen in a normal context. But I also think, you know, sometimes, I don't know, this is my thought. There has to be a balance between our ability to hear things that are uncomfortable, even if we disagree with them, and make space for some thoughts to be still voiced, particularly if somebody's less educated or ignorant about those things, because if we don't allow space for them to be talked about in a healthy, constructive way, then we cannot help break down those myths. But sometimes the environment is such that people can't really talk and say things that might sound slightly crazy because they're misinformed, because they're going to be judged so harshly when they say those things that all they get to do is live with those things in their head and never have them really brought to a civil discord.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It seems like we were setting this up to talk about this for later. We're talking about it now, so we may as well go with it. I think there are a lot of things that play an important part in what's allowable, what's not allowable, and who's allowed to say and do what. It's kind of like we got into this debate once with my class about, I played a clip of a guy named Ralphie May, and I think he's passed away, you know. But he's basically a white guy and he would tell black jokes. He has this famous joke of going to a black movie theater. And he's talking about his experience as a white man in a black movie theater. And people are dying. And the conversation is, why is it okay? Is it okay for white people to make jokes about black people? Is it okay for black people? And is it okay for black people to make jokes about white people? And I wonder if what your group's place in the overarching society matters. So, first of all, Ralphie May was white and overweight. So black people found it funny because somewhere in our heads, we understand that you are part of a marginalized group as well. So if you're a part of a marginalized group, you probably get a little leeway to make jokes about other marginalized groups. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But like if you are a well-to-do white guy and you're making black jokes, people might turn a side eye because you're part of the privilege. The reason that the jester can make fun of the king is because the jester has no power. But if the king makes fun of the jester or poor people, he looks mean. So when we talk about that white-black dynamic, I wonder if power structures matter. So when white people make fun of black people, it's because you have certain level of power and control in society that black people don't. So you just look mean. But people call it a double standard. But when a black comedian makes fun of white people, is there any real power behind it? Can this really affect your life? You know what I'm saying? Me making fun of white people being late or on time all the time really doesn't, in the grand scheme of things, affect the structure of your life in any way. Now, the issue with Dave Chappelle, and this is my personal opinion for anybody listening, and the trans community, it's where they are in regards to our society. They are still, I wonder if people view it as black people are further along in our struggle for civil rights as compared to trans people. So it's a little more loose now. People can make black jokes now. You see what I'm saying? Because we have to some degree made some progress in regards to our place and status in America. But trans people are still in the midst of a fight for their lives from their perspective. You see what I'm saying? So none of it is funny in any way. If you're not a part of our community, none of it is funny. But it's because of where we are. Now, if somebody was, you see what I'm saying? So I think I wonder if that's where Dave Chappelle is, why he's getting so much kickback from some of his trans jokes, even when they may appear harmless. He's telling jokes about a friend that he has and how he's made friends with this trans person and all this kind of stuff, but it's still sensitive. And it's because I'm not trans, I don't know, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to anybody out there that's listening. I really want to be careful about speaking for other people's communities and other people's cultures. So anybody that's listening, I don't mean to be disrespectful when I do that at all. I'm just sort of speculating. I wonder if it's because none of this is funny, because we for real fighting for our lives right now. We in the midst of this fight. Ain't none of that funny. And we don't know what you mean. You know what I'm saying? Or if you even get it.
Well, I mean, I think that's a part, a nuance to Chappelle's comedy, right? Like, is that, so you mentioned, okay, well, maybe it's, you know, we're doing better now. So it's, you know, there's that idea of that black people being a butt of comedy, being, I guess, on a spectrum, better in some way now because things are acceptable. But also, we were butt of a joke when things were not acceptable. I think that's one thing that Dave Chappelle attempts to point out in his contrast. And I'm not saying that he is right or wrong for how he approaches other things, but I do think that's one thing he tries to do. His whole skit about, oh, it's okay for me to use the N-word. He never had a problem with that, but you have a problem with these other things. I like that particular point, which, I mean, we can probably relate to because we're black men. But I also, in addition to that, outside of, you know, it goes to the comedy, but constructive conversations sometimes, I think, get stifled from happening for a lot of reasons. And I think one thing, and this is just my hypothesis on it, is that regardless of what group, a marginalized group you might be in, or what experience that you may have had, regardless of what it is, you know, whether you're black, indigenous, Asian population, LGBTQ+, rural, poor, whatever it is, I think there's also, when you've experienced so much discrimination or angst from other people, that what you might give out unintentionally is a lot of anger, and anger that is got to the point where it doesn't accept no mistakes. So that means there's not a lot of room for someone to make a mistake that is out of ignorance, even though it might be tainted with bias, because we all have bias, but also there are other parts of that person. I'm not saying this is an easy thing, but this is something that I think is a challenge. And for those of you listening, trying to digest it, I want you to really think about that for a second, because when you've been wronged by, if you were to get bit by a dog and that bite was hard, next time you see another dog that looks like that dog, you're probably gonna have some automatic assumptions about how that dog is gonna treat you, and it's gonna cause you to have different behaviors towards that dog, whether this is a new dog or the same dog that bit you. And the thing is, the new dog is not going to have the opportunities to try to change your way. They might even nip at you because they're afraid, but not going to be the one that's going to bite you. But you see a nip, that means a bite. Now you're just like everybody else. I got to overreact on you. And I don't even want to use the word overreact because it's complex. But I'm just saying sometimes we've been hurt so much that we're very, very aware of these things to the point that we might not be able to see the spectrum of that person that is in front of us.
Yeah, I think that, and first, I agree with you in the regard that I understand what Dave Chappelle is trying to do. Like, I get it. Drawing these parallels, you see what I'm saying? Like you said, I can't say the N word. I make 100 N word jokes, and nobody says a word. Like, I get him trying to highlight that. You know what I mean? So I understand that. It's just complicated. You know, I just think that when people have been traumatized and they feel abused and they feel attacked, like, I just think it's hard, you know. Sometimes it makes it hard to hear when that pain is so real.
Right.
And it's every day. You know what I'm saying? Like, and how complex and how hard it is. You know what I'm saying? For some people, why some people in that community are like, ain't none of that cool, ain't none of it off, you know. But I wonder if it's also just where they are from a societal point, where they are in their fight for civil rights. Like, just all of this is just off limits because we literally fighting for our lives. And I just think that probably forms a foundation of a lot of people who, a lot of the pushback and lashback he gets to a point that they can't even hear it. Also, you know, I've always said that I think that that's like, you just gave the true definition of what I define a safe space is. Like, when people talk about, and I think I've said this before, like, when people talk about safe space, I think a safe space is not just somewhere for underrepresented people. I also think that a safe space is a place that people have to be able to come and have conversations and make mistakes and not be burned at the stake for it and not be barbecued for it. Because it's the only way, I think, in order for healing to happen and in order for real understanding to happen, people have to be able to speak freely and make mistakes and be corrected in love. You know what I mean? But I think a part of it is, you know, we talked about this when we talked about cancel culture. Like, I think people are fed up with people being mistreated. So now the conversation is, we got to stamp these people out of society. And when somebody says something, we instantly jump bad. And we automatically attribute them and make them a bad person. And we gotta get them out of, we gotta get these kinds of people out of our society. And really all it does is people from talking. When 10 other racists or 10 other transphobic people or whatever you want to call them, when they see one person make a mistake, it makes them shut up and not say anything. So now they don't have the opportunity to say something and be corrected in love. So then they, like, it's just the cycle that kind of keeps going.
Yeah, I think that's key. Like, this is the, I like that definition of safe space. So when I think about a safe space, all those things are included. And I don't know if the general person thinks about a safe space in that way. They might think about a safe space in a place that you can come and not have to hopefully experience any discrimination or microaggressions or any of those things. Also though, and maybe this doesn't fit under the same safe space though, can there be a place where you can be like a kid with Play-Doh or Legos, where you can try to figure out how these things work, where you can work with ideas and these could be mental schemas you have about people and things and the blend of people we have in this world, until you can get some better knowledge and then readjust what your schema is. But in order for you to do that, if we would just use the example of Legos, we got to see you put the Legos together incorrectly. We got to see you make some crazy figure that makes no sense, and then be like, help you shape how you might make something else out of it. But the problem is people aren't having the opportunity to do that. They're just walking around with these assumptions, and they they might be in a class like your class where you have all these conversations, and that might be the first time they really can talk about it, because they feel like, I have these assumptions, but I don't know if I can even talk about them safely. And if you can't talk about them, you can't grow them. And I'm not saying people, we should be putting people in situations where they want to attack people, but I'll give you another example of just like the whole, from my perspective, the classroom environment. So I've taught in higher ed places throughout these United States, and every state is like its own little cultural microcosm. Every city is different in these United States. If you haven't had the chance to travel the United States or live in other places, you really should. I know people talk about traveling the world, but travel these United States, they're different. What I found in certain circumstances is that you have students that have been, feel like they've lived their life ostracized, and they end up in a place of higher learning that they never thought they would be at, that they don't feel like they're really, in some ways, good enough to be in, that everybody else is better than them. And so when they get a chance to speak about something, particularly if it's discrimination or something they feel like is not really being highlighted in textbooks and different things, they use their voice, but they might use their voice in a very animated, highlighted way that it comes off as aggressive, or comes off as like, wow, like, why are you attacking the professor on this? And then the way that the professor deals with that conversation, you know, allowing there to be discord about a thing without attacking the student, and then maybe later having a conversation with the student to help shape how they present information is important, because some people will react to aggressive student like, no, that's out of line. And then that student will just, that'll be a repeat of what they've experienced so far. The reason that they have been so elevated in their conversation because they felt like they haven't had a voice to speak. And if you're used to having a shout to be heard, then that's what you're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that idea of, again, creating a context for those kind of conversations to happen. You know, I think the issue is, another issue is, the problem is, you know, you said we have to create a context that people can come in and just see how they put Legos together so we can teach them you're doing this wrong. The problem is that when we see people putting their Legos together wrong, we sit and say, how could you do that?
Right.
That makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever for you to start chewing on your Lego. Why would you do that? Humanity feels like common sense to us. But humanity, people's humanity will always feel common sense to you when you're the one at the other end of the foot, when you're the one at the end of the foot getting kicked. But if you're the one that's always doing the kicking, you know, the reasons for why you're kicking the other person, who knows what those reasons are in your head? Maybe they deserve it. Maybe they don't work harder. Maybe they don't work hard as us. Maybe they don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, but my point is that we can't understand how people can't understand other people's humanity. So anything that they say makes no sense. It should feel like common. It should feel like common sense that this is wrong. But like for a lot of men, you see someone that's attractive, you catcall. It's like that should feel, for a lot of men, they're like, really? That bothers you? Like, you know, when you're a part of a group that experiences these things, you understand these nuances in a very different way than somebody on the other side. The person who's doing the catcalling as a man, or a white person, or a black person, or if you're not trans, like you don't see it that way. Or, you know, there was this phrase that we would talk about, like we would say the F word. Or something being gay. You know, that was a common phrase when we was younger as a joke. But if you're not gay, that ain't, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're gay, that ain't funny.
Right.
But it was a phrase that was so common, men threw around on a basketball court or wherever, that it never crossed your mind. But to a gay person, it's kind of like, how do you not see how inhumane that is? So when you start to talk about, we create this context for me to talk about it, somebody who's gay is kind of like, bro, how can you not see how, like, that's dumb. Like, that's literally common sense from their perspective. You see what I'm saying? So I think that a lot of times when we talk about creating these spaces that people can make these mistakes, we have to help people get over the idea that what feels common sense to us might not be to somebody else, and we might not understand why it's not. You may never understand why this, why other people's humanity is not common sense to somebody else. We have to get past, help people figure out how to even get past that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there used to be this phrase, I suppose it's still a phrase, teachable moment, right? And I'm not taking away the fact that I'm sure we both experience purposeful microaggressions or someone purposely discriminating on us. But it doesn't take away from the fact that we all make slips in our conversations and communications that could be based on a lot of things that we're just not aware of because we live in the world in which we live in our own mind. Our world is a world of one that is uniquely nuanced by who we are as a person. And then we use those prescriptions for how we see the rest of the world. But you, sir or ma'am, are a party of one. And there are how many different people, versions of possibilities in this world? Besides the definite categories, there's even within that category of that person who happens to be whatever type of American, whatever sexual orientation, whatever age, then there's still these unique nuances of who that person is, their temperament, parts of their personality, the things that have shaped them based on the work and the regions they've lived in. It's so complicated that we can't really just grasp it in one conversation.
Yeah, I agree. As we sit here and talk about this, I'm thinking about things and all the different barriers that make it complicated for these conversations to happen, for growth and evolution to happen. Like, and I wonder, you know, I just wonder if something else that hurts is how we fundamentally look at people. There are good people and bad people in the world, and that's it. Yeah. And that is, I think, ultimately, that is a problem as well. We don't see us all as people who do good and bad things. There are good people and there are bad people, and I'm one of the good people, and who are you? You did something or said something that's bad, so now you're one of the bad people. Like, we aren't just people who all make mistakes. What group do you go in? Either you're with me or you're against me. I'm a good person. If you don't feel like me, and you're saying some other stuff that the other people say, then you're a bad person. So I think that ultimately, in order for real change to happen, like, we have to fundamentally see people. We have to fundamentally change how, believing that people can grow, that they can evolve, that they can change, that they can learn. You know, like, we still... I can remember Mark Wahlberg said the N-word and he was like 18. That man is like almost 50 now or something. And like, they start to barbecue him and fillet him for something that he said like 30 years ago as an 18-year-old kid. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, is he the same person, the same man? Like, do we allow people, do we give people the leeway to grow and evolve and change? You know, are people good or bad people? I don't know.
Right. Well, I think that part about the good or bad is important. It's very dialectical. Like, you got to be this way or that way. And I was going to blame it on Disney, but then I thought about it. Right. I would say there are a certain number of movies where there's a hero and villain where you get a villain story. And they kind of humanize the villain when you get the whole villain story. Like, they'll be like, I'm thinking about like Cruella De Vil, if you've seen the newer version when they show her story. They show something happening. They show a range or nuance of this person. So I can't blame it on Disney. But that's the idea, that we do have this range, and people are not just one way or the other. And even when we talk about incidents, like, we talk about the Will Smith incident, but that Will Smith incident is reminiscent of the Juwan Howard incident, who's a coach for the University of Michigan, and he slapped another coach after an incident. But the type of thing they say when they're talking about it is like, oh, that's out of character. And that goes to this idea of, you either got a good character or you got a bad character. But I think in reality, we have a character that is prone to many nuances that would fall periodically under the quote unquote good and bad, depending on what moral spectrum you have.
I don't know.
Fair for trial.
I don't. I mean, this is the age old. This is the conversation that we've had over and over and over. What are the things that we need to go to do to get people to listen, to be, I hate the word tolerant, because that means you're putting up with something, to be more accepting, more open and accepting to people, to cultures, to races, to lifestyles that are outside of your awareness and your box.
Well, I mean, I think it's really important because this leads to, I know it's a hot topic right now. People might not want to talk about it, but the whole Roe versus Wade, if that's going to be overturned or not. And so you kind of have circles of people having that conversation. We won't necessarily get into the conversation where we fit on it, but the whole idea is, are we open? Can we? I don't think it's so much just about tolerating because there's this association that if you're on one side or the other, that tells me everything I need to know about who you are as a person. Like you, it's almost like, okay, well, if you're Christian, then if you're Christian and you have these beliefs that are unfortunately against LGBTQ, like you can't be in the same room. And that's what makes America get divided. I mean, we're a country of lots of different religions, like lots of different people with people that like different types of foods, different types of countries, have different type of practices. So then if we do subscribe to this idea that these nuanced things about you are going to tell us all we need to know about your character, then you're really going to be limited to the people that keep coming up in your Facebook feed.
I agree. Roe versus Wade. Do we don't want to do that. But I mean, I agree with you. That's all I want to say about that is I agree with you. Like, people are complex. And part of what we do is we put people in boxes for our protection. We gotta know. I mean, it's something we've done since the beginning of time. I have to know how to interact with you. No different than we box people up the same way we box up if it's got four wheels and it's made of metal, it's a car. I need to know that's a car and what cars do so I don't step in front of a car or a tree. And like we put things in boxes so we cognitively know how to deal with people. And if you show one sign, you must have the other signs, and you're a danger to me in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And people are just complicated. I actually just saw an interview with that the head of UFC. What was his name? Dana White did.
In a way, yeah.
And they asked him about his relationship with. He said, "I have a lot of friends that say and do a lot of things that I don't agree with. That don't mean I'm still not their friend. I understand that I'm not going to agree with every idea and every perspective and every facet of who a person is, but there's a core there that we connect with. Basically, there's a core that we connect with that's worth preserving. And all these other things around the fringes, I may or may not agree with, but that just because you have one thing, that doesn't completely define who they are and means that I need to sever that relationship in some way." But again, the problem is that some of these issues that we're talking about, what makes it so complicated is from a group's perspective, it deals with their humanity. When we talk about trans issues, or when we talk about black issues, or when we talk about women's issues, the idea that you're gonna tell me what I can do with my body, I get that. Like I get that. That's not something small. Like that deals with, sort of giving women integrity to their bodies and to their space. Like I just I and I get it, and then I don't get it because I'm not a woman. Only women understand the nuances of that in a way that men will never understand, which is why I understand why women say, "You shouldn't have a say so in this, because you don't, because this is an experience you don't have and could never have. So you could never understand the nuances of what we feel and what we're talking. No matter how much you read, no matter how many conversations you have, you'll never truly understand the nuances of this issue. So why are you deciding it for me? Like, I give that most integrity and respect. I understand that. You know, it's like when somebody white is trying to decide black issues, I'm like, you don't understand the culture or any of the issues, or you don't live it and breathe it in the same way. So how can you make decisions for us? Like, I get that. So, you know, I understand all sides. The question is, how can we get people in a room and they can say things and they can make mistakes and they can be corrected out of love? They can get in this environment that they can learn. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, you know, and I think that it's difficult because I think when it comes to certain issues, you're probably going to lean one way more than the other. I think with a lot of issues, I find myself more in the middle, you know. But when we think about the history in this country and how women's rights have just not been as thought about or respected as men's rights, and even overturning something like this is just like, I can't believe that this is, I've said enough. But the point is, there's just, I believe in equality, but and at the same time, being able to have conversations with people from different sides of the aisle. I mean, that's the whole political goal for politicians. That's what they say they're really trying to do. And I'm not trying to really judge politicians. I have no idea what it's like to do that job. But actually reaching across the aisle is something that we should be learning from the time we're in the sandbox. You know, being able to play in that sandbox and understand other people's views and what they think and how they think, and that you can actually disagree with somebody and still be friends with them. Like, do you have to really unfriend them? I understand if it's like fundamental to you that you feel like this person is like totally horrible now because their belief in this, but in a way based on things that maybe aren't necessarily that we need to sever relationships over it. I don't know. I mean, that's just my thought.
Yeah. And that's interesting that you say, how many people are we throwing away? And what is your goal? Is your goal to win? Or is your goal to make the world a better place? And I think that that's the problem, is that we like, this is a battle of us versus them, whatever your issue is, and we're trying to win. But do you truly make the world a better place when we throw people away?
Yeah.
And it seems like the goal should be to help people grow and evolve and get a better understanding. So right. We can help. Having someone with a better understanding helps the world grow. But the process is just so hard.
So two things to that. You said something earlier I wanted to make sure that I spoke to. You said, you know, you're talking about acceptance and tolerance. And the idea, I think one thing is accepting that people will make mistakes allows you to be able to have fruitful conversations that will lead to growth. If you're intolerant of any mistake, then you don't have an environment that is safe. Rather, we're talking about these deeper conversations or just experimenting in general. If you think about companies that have been great at different things, Google or whatever company, they probably have had an open space for people to try to create, do things, mess up, have a prototype that doesn't work, and they come up with something else great. And that's how they did it, because there was enough space to do it. But if you're in an environment where you can't think freely, you don't get to explore ideas, and this also goes with things that you might have misunderstandings over. You need that environment where you can say things, mess up, and have them and get new information coming in. The other thing is we as people could grow from these conversations. I think the other thing that happens, the reason people aren't comfortable having these conversations at some level is because they feel like, if I allow you to have a deep conversation with me on this, then I am giving something of myself. The primary part of who I am as a person is being dismissed if I actually really am open enough to hear you. And the other thing is, I mean, I think in order for you really to be able to, if you wanted to be the type that's going to change people's minds and be the person that does reformation, you think about people in history that did reformation, they really had a solid understanding of the first thing, and then they reformed it. You have to have a solid understanding before you can reform anything if your goal is to change people's minds.
Agreed. I like that. I agree with all of that. Real quick, because we run up on time. What do we say to the person? And I don't know if you have an answer. This is something we can answer together. What do we say to the person that says, I'm tired of teaching these folks something they should already know? I think that I definitely know that that's where a whole lot of black people are. It's actually why I stopped doing a lot of multicultural competency stuff for a while, because it became exhausting. It became exhausting at one point, and this is just me being honest. I got exhausted literally teaching basic humanity things, things that don't even have to, I was at a point that, okay, I understand you don't black household. You never grew up with black friends. I get it that there are just certain things you won't know because you've never had those experiences. But there were certain just things that just deal with the humanity of people that it just, at a point I had to kind of step away from it and then sort of recharge and jump back into that game because it's tiring. And I would hear black people say, why do I have to teach something like about basic humanity? And when it comes to women, I wonder, again, I'm just speculating, I wonder if for women and this role issue, why do we have to be the one to teach you some about basic humanity? And trans people are like, this is just basic humanity stuff. Like, I'm sick of teaching basic, like, human stuff. Like, and the sad part is as unfortunate as it is, it's just the work that we have to do. And accepting the idea that as a black person, as I don't want to say annoying, but as annoying as it is to have to teach basic humanity stuff about people, if I want the world to be a better place, it's just the work that some of us have to do. And as a trans person, unfortunately, it might just be the work you have to do. And as a woman, it just might be the work we have to do. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's tough. You know, I can definitely relate to that myself. I mean, I'm thinking about it. You know, I was in multiple high schools, but with the exception of one, when I lived with my grandmother and I was in an all-black high school then, I have been in the minority in most school and work situations. I've been in the minority of minorities. Like, I've been in places where it's mostly Latina and, you know, than me. So there's always been lots of splaining to do, right? And it does definitely get tiring, but what I'll tell you from my own personal experience is through relationships with folk, when I could really understand, and I'm not saying that people should have to accept all the things that are coming through them because some of them are not right, but when I could really understand the person, that's been the best way for me to handle it. Because if I have a deep enough relationship with somebody where they can tell me, look, I just, you know, I think I kind of fumbled on this, and we got to have a heart to heart. I felt like that's been, I don't know, because I haven't gotten feedback from everybody that's been transformational for them. But I felt, at least on my end, that, wow, that was probably a productive conversation for both of us, because it gave me a better understanding of what was going on with them and how to construe it and how to be in the world. But like you said, it's not easy work. I mean, it's probably not fair that's a cross that we have to bear. So I guess the advice I would give is relationships. So that's not going to take away from all the random people that come and ask you this stuff because you're the one person in the department that, or wherever you're at, that happens to be the minority. And they're like, so what do you think about? Okay, that's okay. But people that are actually your colleagues that are trying to get to know you, that's different.
Yeah.
In some regard, the relationships really matter.
Yeah. I think that the more we talk about this and the more I reflect on it, that has to be, those are the couple of hurdles. It's one, it's hard to constantly have to bear that cross, like you said. And then two, the getting over the idea that getting people to see you as a human, whether it being black or a woman or being trans or whatever piece of your identity is, the idea that I have to get you to see me as a person is mind-blowing and enraging. And I think that those who are underrepresented, that's to get over to do the work, I think. to do the work the right way, because I think that that rage will bleed through and taint the work to some degree. If in some way we don't learn to make peace with it, that it is just what we are just called to do. And I don't think that everybody is, but those who can make peace with it are the ones that have to do that work. And it's just hard, you know. It's hard. So I don't know. And again, all of this came from, again, comedians and jokes and backlash that Dave Chappelle has gotten from making trans jokes, for those who might just be joining, you know. I don't know. I'm interested to see how people who have listened or who will listen to this, your reactions and responses. Like, I really would like for people to chime in if you can. B2Bpsych@gmail.com, just to give us your ideas and perspectives. Again, please don't worry about hurting our feelings. Like, we are truly, and we hope that people appreciate, none of this is written, that this isn't even what we plan to talk about tonight. Like, this was just impromptu. We never write anything down, and we purposefully barely talk about, we don't plan, I'm gonna say this, you're gonna say that. Like, we purposefully may talk about, let's talk about this, talk about a topic, and it is all organic and in the moment. So we ask for grace if we say anything that has offended anybody. We truly ask for grace. We really are two people who want to make the world a better place, just trying to feel our way through, you know, some of these answers. I'm sorry, Dr. Chapman, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I was going to say, also, can they reach out to you on Facebook? Because I know some are probably maybe not going to go to the email. And then just to highlight that idea that this is a man cave. You know, the show is brother to brother. And the idea is it's two black psychologists and a mic. And we're letting you into our man cave over the airwaves.
Yeah, yeah. And again, Keelan Hinton, KEELONHINTON. You can gladly accept any messages on Messenger or private messages on Messenger or whatever. Like I said, if you give us your permission, you know, or we will read, you know, some of your responses with or without your name, whatever makes you comfortable. But we would like to hear people's perspectives, you know, on sort of, you know, how do we make progress? How do we move forward? What is it about whatever your struggle is? And even, like I said, from a white male perspective, it's not just underrepresented. Like, you know, we just want to hear all sides of this. You know what I mean? You know, I've had white men tell me, I feel like I love everybody, and I feel like I can't win for losing. Every time I step in a room, I'm a cis white male, and I'm the devil before I've even opened my mouth. And it's like, I've had friends and people say it's hard because I really care about everybody. But the fact of the matter is, if I receive privilege, I can't help it, and I didn't ask for it. So what do I do? How do I help, and what do I do? Because it becomes hard. And then some of those guys, I know some guys that have gotten bitter from it, because they're kind of like, and I'm not speaking for all white men. I know some guys who've gotten bitter from it. It's kind of like, I haven't done anything, and everybody's mad at me. Well, F y'all. All of y'all. I don't care about none of y'all issues then. If you're going to blame me and I haven't done anything, well, I don't care. Go deal with your stuff then. Again, I'm not saying everybody feels like that. I'm saying I know some people who, you know, were good people. And when they continue to walk into the room and they've done nothing but get blamed for something, then they're just like, well, I don't care. Forget y'all then. Deal with your stuff. So I just think that that's an interesting conversation. I'm saying that to say we want to hear everybody's perspective, not just people of color, not just trans people, but all sides of this, because I think that everybody having a voice is how we all get a better understanding, and how we can sort of move things and move issues in the right direction, whatever that direction is. So again, we appreciate those who listen and who continue to support. I'd like to reiterate, we want to thank Marshall University and WML for giving us this platform to talk about mental health issues, community issues, everything else in between. Again, anything that you've heard on this show, these are the sole perspectives of myself and Dr. Chapman. They do not represent anyone that we do consulting work for, anyone that we do therapy for, any institutions that we work for or serve in any way, shape, form, or fashion. These are our personal perspectives and ideas and thoughts. And again, as we always say, if we've offended anybody, please charge it to our heads and not our hearts. We're just here, as he said, trying to have a conversation, trying to tease apart these problems and issues literally in the moment. You know, and I once heard a guy say, and it's something that I learned as I've taught over the years, is anytime you speak impromptu, eventually you're going to say something wrong. If you're speaking and you're speaking off the cuff and you're speaking, you're having organic conversations, at some point or another, you're going to say something wrong. So again, you know, we ask you charge it to our head, not our hearts. You know, if any way, shape, form, or fashion during this process, we've offended anybody, but, you know, we here in peace and love and just trying to spur conversation and just trying to find the right direction. So, again, as I always say, we thank you all for listening. We love you all. Peace and blessings to you. As I always say, graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure that when you die empty. Don't take anything to the grave that you love. Know that you love them, and make sure that you are doing something that you truly know is important, and you do something that sets your soul on fire and makes you feel alive and that gives you purpose. And as always, Dr. Chapman will take us out.
So we've thought through a number of things today. I think one of the take homes is having healthy discords, healthy dialogues. You know, we're both academicians, and you know, part of, I think, the mission of college is to educate people. And the way that I define education, or one of the definitions that I really appreciate, I can't think about whose definition it is at the moment, is the idea that education is evoking. It's like bringing something out of someone. And I think it's a combination when you're in the business of education, of bringing something out and helping that person shape it and mold it into a way that's productive in the world and society in which they live. And what I think would be important for you to take away from today is that sometimes evoking people, we put a jar on people. We don't allow things to come out that can be shaped and pruned and ready to grow. People are in a lot of ways like plants, but what you want to give plants are the right environment to grow. You know, they need sunlight, they need soil, they need all kinds of support in order for them to get to the right level. Them in a dark place, particularly when they do something that's a little bit off, they're not going to grow. Hopefully you want to be in the business of growth too. And if we remember that we live in a society, and a society is not about one person, it's about the whole. And in order for the whole to be better, we need to provide opportunities for the whole to grow. That means there's going to be missteps. That means there's going to be mistakes. The person that can allow for teachable moments is going to have the better impact on society. So I just ask you to find it in your heart to do that. And the other thing I ask you is, how diverse is your circle? If we think about ourselves as shapes, are you surrounded by a whole bunch of squares? If you're just in a room full of squares, how much can you really grow? The best group is a diverse group. I mean, if you think about how the country runs, that's why we have reaching across the aisle. That's why we have not just a president, but a whole cabinet. Who's in your cabinet? Does your cabinet look just like you? If it does, it might be something for you to reconsider. Peace and blessings.
You can tell everybody, yeah, you can tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man, yes I am, yes I am, yes I am, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. W.